What does it mean to be a Western yogi? How can someone who was born and raised in the West, who comes from a Judeo-Christian background, practice yoga and meditation in an authentic and genuine way? My name is Christopher Sartain, and this is the Western Yoga Podcast. It's a beautiful winter morning here in southern Chile. It's been a morning of rest. Yesterday we had a couple of volunteers here helping out. Don't worry, we practiced social distancing. And we chopped a lot of wood, moved a lot of firewood around, and worked in the garden pulling up dead plants and weeds, cleaning. And spent most of the day working. Taking advantage of the unseasonably warm weather that we're experiencing here in southern Chile this late fall, late autumn time here in the southern hemisphere. In the yoga tradition, and also in the Kriya yoga tradition to which I belong, for those of you who don't know, I am a ordained minister or authorized teacher in the tradition of Kriya yoga. My guru is Roy Eugene Davis, who was a direct disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda. And in my Kriya yoga tradition, and in the yoga tradition, generally speaking, there are two paths. There are considered to be two paths, the householder path and the renunciate path. For example, in my Kriya yoga tradition, Mahavatar Babaji, we could say, was a renunciate. He was not married. He did not have children. He did not have a family. He lived a secluded life as a hermit in the Himalayan mountains. And he was an ascetic, a renunciate. Lahiri Mahashaya, however, was a householder. He was a father and a husband. He had a very sort of what you would call ordinary side to his life. But of course, he was an extraordinary yogi and master. Sri Yukteswar also was married at one point, did have children also. Was a householder for some time, and then later became a renunciate swami. Swamis are renunciates, they are celibates, they practice brahmacharya in the strictest sense. Whereas householders are married and live in the world and have children and have normal jobs out in the world. Paramahansa Yogananda was a celibate renunciate swami also. And my guru, Roy Eugene Davis, was a householder also. So we can see that there are two paths, generally speaking, in the yoga tradition, the path of the householder and the path of the renunciate. This is especially true in India for yogis living in India. However, we see that it is also true here in the Western world. There are, of course, ashrams and organizations that exist here in the West and Western countries where there are monks and swamis and things of that nature. And there are celibate renunciate yogis living in the West, but they are few and far between. The vast majority of people who practice yoga or who consider themselves to be yogis are what we would call householder yogis here in the West, the vast majority. Whereas historically speaking, in India, yogis, the vast majority of yogis were celibates, were renunciates. Historically speaking, we're talking, you know, hundreds of years ago, thousands of years ago, up until recently, really. The vast majority of yogis, so-called yogis, were celibate renunciates. However, in our modern world, in the West, the vast majority of people who consider themselves to be yogis are householders. This drastically shifts the emphasis of yoga and how we practice yoga here in the West. In India, there's an emphasis on purity, brahmacharya, celibacy, the conservation of vital forces, the sublimation, the transmutation of sexual energies into more subtle energies like ojas, and the activation of kundalini, this dormant, sleeping evolutionary force of divine consciousness. Whereas in the Western world, as yoga has evolved here, we are seeing more of an emphasis on how the lessons that we learn from the practice of yoga, from the texts of yoga, how those lessons translate into our daily lives. With our families, with our careers, as we navigate our way through a normal, quote-unquote, existence in the world, participating in worldly affairs. So as Westerners, we have to understand that it is necessary for us to adapt somewhat the teachings from the yogic texts of India so that we can practice them in a more genuine and authentic way as Westerners. Now, that's not to say if someone feels like they want to become a renunciate yogi and live here in the West or go to India to live in an ashram or whatever, that's fine. There's nothing at all wrong with that. However, for Westerners who choose to continue with their normal Westerner householder lifestyle, they have to understand that, of course, they will have to adapt a little bit some of the teachings from the aesthetic yogis of the past from India, who were renunciates and celibates and brahmacharis. And that's okay. The question is there some benefit to this renunciate lifestyle that so few choose to have? In other words, why would one choose to be a renunciate? Why wouldn't everyone choose to live a balanced, rich life in the world, taking advantage of the time that we have here, as well as cultivating this constant inner awareness of our true nature through the higher yogic practices and techniques? Is there some benefit that we could derive from living a renunciate, celibate lifestyle? Of course. Or the choice wouldn't exist. Otherwise, there would be no choice. You understand? So, there are benefits that one can derive from this celibate renunciate lifestyle. For example, in the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali, Patanjali states that a yogi should avoid any future karma, any future suffering, future karma. And therefore, the life of the celibate renunciate should be slightly easier in that regard. It should be slightly easier, should be, for a renunciate to avoid future karma if they do not have family, children, career responsibilities. We create a lot of our karma through these interactions and entanglements that we have karmically with family, friends, our co-workers, our neighbors, so on and so forth. Therefore, there is some advantage, in other words, to this renunciate, celibate lifestyle, especially if one is living in a secluded, cloistered environment, in a monastery or ashram, in a secluded, natural, healthy, clean environment, a sattvic environment. Then future karma could be more easily avoided for one who is living in such an environment without many distractions, without much interaction with the outside world. Future karma could be more easily avoided. That's the idea. So there is some benefit, of course, to the renunciate lifestyle. Also, there is some benefit to celibacy, to practicing brahmacharya in its strictest sense, by conserving this sexual energy. We can, in fact, transmute it into ojas, which has a vivifying and vitalizing effect on the physical body, the energetic body, and we do tend to produce more soma and amrita when we are practicing celibacy. And kundalini energy is more easily activated and all these types of things. This is true. These are verifiable and repeatable facts for anyone who wishes to experiment in the laboratory of their own being. Yeah, that's what yoga is, isn't it? It's a scientific process whereby we experiment with various techniques, practices, and the laboratory of our own being. And we can see for ourselves if the effects and benefits of these techniques and practices are repeatable. Then we know that something is practical to use, and we know that something is effective to use. So celibacy can have some benefit for a yogi or yogini, man or woman. No, it's not important. However, that's not to say that one cannot be a householder and also from time to time practice, you know, a couple months of celibacy here and there, with, of course, the agreement of their partner. That's why it's very important for, well, it's a little easier for householders to have partners who are also on a spiritual path, who are educated about these things, who know about these things. So if at one point in your marriage or partnership you want to, you know, you want to have a period of celibacy once a year or something like that, where you go a month or 2 months or 3 months or however long you wish without having sex, then you should have a partner who's educated about these things, so they'll understand what you're talking about. What are you talking about? You want to cultivate more ojas and produce soma nectar in your brain. What the hell are you, you know? For example, if you are a serious yogi and your partner is, oh gosh, I don't want to pick on anybody in particular, but I don't know, a fundamentalist Christian or whatever, that doesn't understand these things or isn't educated about these things, then you might have a more difficult time practicing something like that or trying something like that. It's not to say that your marriage can't work, however. Okay, that's not what I'm indicating here. But I do believe that it is easier for householders who wish to practice a period of brahmacharya or celibacy, it is much easier for them to do so with a willing and educated partner who is also willing to try something like that from time to time in one's marriage or partnership. So we should not say that there is no benefit to celibacy. There is. There are benefits to the renunciate lifestyle as well. There are. Especially if one is living in a secluded environment with little interaction with others or the outside world. There are benefits. Absolutely. Spiritual benefits. However, in the West, this type of lifestyle isn't quite as accepted or acceptable culturally. Especially in the Western world with our obsession with sex and all things sexual. So celibacy and this type of, also the, you know, the, not only that, but the idea of living a secluded lifestyle, a sort of monastic lifestyle, a renunciate lifestyle just doesn't appeal to most Westerners, even most Western yogis. Most householders here in the West wish to, or rather, most people in the West, not just householders, people in the West, Westerners, most of us, wish to live a rich and fulfilling life in the world. As we allow our role in the world to unfold in divine order. Some would ask, are there any gray areas? Are there paths outside of this duality, this dualistic model of householder versus renunciate? Is there a third path, or are there any paths in between those two paths? I would argue yes. I would argue there is some gray area. There is some room for compromise. My guru lived such a life, walked such a path, I believe. He told me privately. I don't know that he ever really said publicly that he lived a semi-monastic lifestyle. He might have, or he may have put that in some of his publications. I don't recall off the top of my head, but he told me privately several times that for most of his life, he had led a what he called semi-monastic lifestyle. Those were his words, semi-monastic. And I have to say that I too live sort of a semi-monastic lifestyle, for lack of a better term. And Mr. Davis practiced a lot of sadhana every day for many decades. Long hours in the morning, and worked diligently writing books, traveling and teaching, working closely with disciples. But he was also married and had children and all of that. So he described his lifestyle and his path as being semi-monastic. And I would have to say that I follow a similar path. I'm not a renunciate, I'm not a celibate, I am married. However, we do not have children. And that allows us a little bit more time for our sadhana, our spiritual pursuits, meditation, and so forth. So that I can practice a more semi-monastic lifestyle. We do live out in the middle of nowhere, really, in the mountains, and don't have many neighbors. And so I am able to lead a sort of secluded life. And I practice long hours of sadhana. But I am married and I do interact with others in the world and I have worldly responsibilities and all of that. I prefer to live in the world. I prefer to be married, to have a spiritual partner, a life partner, and to live in that way. So there is some wiggle room, some gray area. We can live a semi-monastic lifestyle here in the West. And I know others, other followers, disciples of my guru, that also have a very similar semi-monastic type of lifestyle. And I have to say that it works out well for us with our personality types and with our amount of familial and career responsibilities and duties and all of that. So there is some wiggle room. Also, some people prefer to remain single and not get married and have kids and all of that, but they also don't want to live in an ashram or a monastery, anything like that. And so what are we to make of this? They are sort of celibate, some of them by choice, others maybe not so much. But they're not renunciates, and yet they're not householders, are they? Because they're not married with kids and all of that. So yes, there is some gray area. It's not simply, you know, householder on one side, renunciate on the other. There are people who walk paths in between the two more structured, I guess you would say, paths of the yoga tradition, myself included. And so here in the West, it's very possible to live a semi-monastic lifestyle. You do not have to be a full renunciate. You can still enjoy having some independence, living in the world, and interacting. But also practice long hours of sadhana and live a more, you know, secluded sort of lifestyle in nature, like you would in you know, most monasteries and things like that. So it is possible to live a semi-monastic lifestyle in the West, if you so choose, if that fits your personality and your particular life situation with your family and career and all of that. But if you plan well and you make some good choices. Nobody's perfect. You know, we're all going to make some bad choices here and there. I certainly have. But if you make fairly good choices and you plan well ahead of time and save money and all those things, I find that it is possible to have a sort of semi-monastic lifestyle in the West, if you so choose. You can also live as a renunciate in the West. There are organizations and ashrams and monasteries that exist in the West. It's not as common, but there are some. They do exist, and one can live the renunciate lifestyle in Western countries, many of them. And of course, you are free to live a sort of more ordinary, normal householder lifestyle also, and still practice your sadhana and be a good, happy, healthy, holistic yogi. That's totally fine too. That's a normal option. So we can see that in the Western world, most of us are householders. There aren't a lot of renunciate yogis living here in the West. There are some, of course, but historically speaking, the majority of yogis were renunciates, of course. And in the modern age, the majority of yogis are householders. So this has been a huge shift in the history of yoga. But as we know, most of the ancient texts were written by and for renunciates. And so it is difficult somewhat to apply all of what is in the ancient text to our modern Western householder lifestyle. But we apply what we can and we adapt what we have to adapt. And that's fine. These traditions always evolve. They are always evolving. They always will evolve. As society changes, as cultures shift, as paradigms shift, the traditions adapt themselves in order to survive, don't they? They all do. They always have and they always will. And that's okay. It's natural. However, even as Westerners, we householder Westerners, we should do our best, of course, to adhere or do our best to follow, I would say, the yamas and niyamas at the very least, you know, Patanjali. With the exception, of course, of brahmacharya, which historically meant more of a celibate, you know, meant celibacy, basically. In the modern context, we have suddenly decided, I've noticed, to define brahmacharya as the conservation of energy or something like that, which is fine. I like that definition. Actually prefer it, especially for us as householder Westerners. But historically, it basically was known to mean celibacy. Yeah. So, here in the West, we have the freedom to choose, depending on which country you live in. But in most countries, of course, we are free to choose which spiritual practices we would like to practice. And what things we want to believe and how we want to pursue our spirituality is totally up to us, and we are independent and free to pursue our spirituality how we would like to pursue it, for the most part. And so, here in the West, we have a choice, you know. You can be a renunciate yogi if you so choose. You can be a householder yogi. And we also have some gray areas, don't we, that we can play around with a little. There's a little bit of wiggle room whereby you can lead a sort of semi-monastic lifestyle. We're very fortunate here in the West that we have these opportunities, depending, of course, on one's socioeconomic status and all of that. Okay, I'm speaking in general terms here. I hope you have enjoyed this episode. And I hope that we have sparked a little bit of interest in examining these various yoga paths. And I sincerely hope that you will subscribe to the podcast and share it with others. Until next time, namaste.